to me. Oh! Oh!
I despise. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's program later. We post it about an hour from now on Facebook. And I want to thank all the people who've been coming to Facebook in the last year. It's in the millions and who are listening around the world. Today, we're going to share a lot on health and healing, but more importantly today, I'm going to be sharing some insights from several different perspectives about the human condition and how each of us, based upon our generation and our willingness to transform our lives or the limitations of adapting, what we're faced with. I'll play an audio clip from a former top executive at Facebook who says that social media is ripping society apart, but then I'll also share a commentary about adapting to technology and net neutrality or dying. And this is from a millennial and who has specific ideas. I will save my own ideas. I want you to think about how you're going to process this. And also, I'll share an article today about how Americans say they're worse off today than 50 years ago. Now, we may be worse off, but other people in the world are not. They're doing very well. In fact, of 37 countries, this quality of life and standard of living have improved. But for more than 70% of Americans, it has degraded, degenerated. We'll discuss that. Also today, I'll give my views, for whatever they're worth, on why I'm opposed, 100% opposed, the GOP tax plan that would give 15 of America's largest corporations a $236 billion tax cut, and why that's not a good idea, and why everything you've been told are either half-truths or full lies, why we should oppose it. And then I have a guest in the second part of our program, Dr. Raphael Kelman. And we're going to talk about our microbiome and the relationship to our brain and thyroid and mental health. And Raphael always is an articulate person. And I also want to talk about a group of women, over a million women, who are farmers, but they're facing challenges. And why? At the very same time that they're facing challenges and working 80-hour weeks, there's a need to refocus on how they're farming. And I'm willing to help them. So I'm going to give an insight into that. We have a lot, as you can see, to cover today. So we'll begin. And let me also mention that tonight on our Progressive Commentary Hour, part two of a five-part in-depth original series done by myself and one of our resident scholars and residents, Richard Gale. We have read over 3,000 scientific articles on the climate, every aspect of it, on our globe, our environment. We've left nothing out of this report. And it's meant to help the average person who's not going to spend 20,000 hours of research, not going to read over 100 textbooks, interview at least 100 climatologists, but want to know what's happening, what are we faced with. So all that is in this boiled down, highly concentrated, filled with fact, but in lay language presentation. I did part one last week. I played that first part on our sister station, WBAI, but didn't realize yesterday that BAI was off the air. Our sister station, where I've been for 41 years, had a problem when there was a power surge in the Empire State Building where they have all their radio signals, and our equipment, unfortunately, at WBAI is old, antiquated, and so it couldn't handle the surge and piece of equipment burned out. Those pieces have to be reordered, have been, and though there's no certain date when we'll be back on the air, could be today, could be tomorrow, it'll be soon, but to be off the air 24/7 for 4 days, that's the kiss of death for your audience, unless there are small part of the audience that are not tech savvy. We are being broadcast over their internet, so we wish them well getting up as quickly as possible, but most people didn't have a chance to hear that. So it will be rebroadcast one day this week when WBAI is back on the air. But 7 o'clock tonight, please listen in. This is extremely important because I don't compromise ever when it comes telling the truth. And yet, I have interviewed so many climatologists and environmental experts who know the truth and they're afraid it'll panic people if you tell them what's happening now and what's going to happen, as if we can't handle that. Well, we need to know. So you're going to know. And the last program is all about solutions. So that's 7 p.m., prn.fm. or progressiveradionetwork.com. Now, a lot of you have pain in the necks. In fact, chronic neck pain, and it can be debilitating. You can end up with dizziness, loss of balance, headaches, stiffness in the neck, because when your neck's pained, anywhere we're pained, we tend to tighten. And when muscles are tightened, lactic acid builds up. When lactic acid builds up, you have lactic acid crystals, and that's where that burn comes from. Well, most people, unfortunately, just take pain medication, and that can lead to opiate use and abuse. In fact, I just found out yesterday that someone I've known for a long time, have enormous respect for, was having post-surgical pain, is now literally addicted to the opiates. I just found out, and I'll try to help that person get off the opiates. Is there a way off the opiates? Yes, there is. And I'll be sharing that protocol with people that I've gotten off opiate addictions in an upcoming program. You'll hear from them directly, and then I'll share the protocol with everyone. But here's the latest way of helping with this condition. And this is from three separate universities, including University of Maryland School of Medicine, University of Zurich, which is in Switzerland, and the University of Berlin, which is in Germany. And here's what it says. A new study evaluating a form of Chinese massage. Now, write this down. It's Tuina. T-U-I-N-A. T-U-I-N-A. Now, there are practitioners who know exactly how to do this. Not your average masseuse. Not the average person who's, you know, is a regular massage therapist. But generally people who study oriental massage, who have a degree in it. It's very effective. In fact, it says that it really works. And this was in a peer-reviewed journal that it was published, the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. So try it. It's no more expensive than a regular massage, but they know how to work the muscles and the trigger points and the meridian points in a way that releases tension, relaxes the muscles, can help with the adjustment in the chronic neck pain area. So that's important when you consider how many millions of people have that and lower back pain. This I found interesting. I have three major books. When I say major, these are big books, and they're all completely original. No one's done anything on these topics like this, and they're big books, over 1,000 pages each. One's 1,300 pages. And one is on veganism, and there's a chapter in there where I go through the scientific literature and just use common sense. You don't have to be a scientist or a dietitian or nutritionist or public health official to appreciate what I'm about to say. The vast majority of Americans, over 95%, eat a diet that is in part or whole not complementary to health, but rather promotes disease. I was given a call last night. I was writing my commentaries, and person says, turn on this channel, I want you, the food channel. I think it was the food channel. It's Man versus Food. And the guy was going to eat some of the hottest peppers on earth, but a whole bunch of it, and in a certain period of time. But also he was going to eat this sandwich and eat some other things. None of this healthy, but not just not healthy, but the amount of food that a person was putting in their body puts them at risk of dying. So first, I consider it extremely irresponsible of any food network, not the food network, but any program. I feel it's irresponsible to the producers, to the people working on the program, and to the host. Because what happens is, when you eat, in the case of the older shows, I haven't seen that guy in a while, I don't know what happened to him, but he would eat 6 pounds. It was 6 pounds of ice cream, or 6 pounds of French fries, or 6 pounds of meat at a single sitting. That is so irresponsible. And yet, people then cheer that on. These are frequently done at the most popular restaurants in a given city, where people then anticipate that they're going to get gorged, huge amounts of food. Well, exactly where are you supposed to store that protein? Now, 50% of protein is fat, like meat, like a steak, and you get double the amount of calories from fat that you do, 8 calories per gram, oxidized versus 4. Then do you realize how many calories you're taking in when you eat one of those big meals? You could easily, in these restaurants, consume 3,000 calories in a single meal. And I'm not talking about the 6-pound sandwich the guy's eating, because then you're up around 5,000 calories, an enormous amount of fat, and your blood is like a milkshake, and you've got so much coagulation in there, and you're going to have clumping and aggregation, and you could have a heart attack or stroke. It's like Russian roulette. And yet these are now the most popular restaurants in America. Gorging, huge portions. That's one thing. Excess calories are one way that we age the body prematurely. It shortens the telomeres. You literally, every time you have one of those meals, you take time off your lifespan. But the other side is that there is no science in existence. And as a scientist, as a nutrition scientist, as a public health scientist, a person who's published in peer-reviewed literature. And by the way, next week, we're going to post over 60 of my major scientific papers, including those in peer-reviewed journals, to see all the topics I've done throughout my life. Just published one 2 months ago in a peer-reviewed journal based upon clinical study, in 40 clinical studies. I want you to see that there's not a single article that supports eating meat that will reverse aging, increase your lifespan, is good for your heart, is good for your brain, is good for your eyes, your liver, your kidneys. All of the science is bad. And that's what I try to show in that chapter, that all the science is bad. Not a little. It's not controversial. It's not like the game of the cigarette industry. Well, smoking is good. No, it's not. Well, it's undecided. No, it has been decided. But still, we smoke for 100 years after we knew it was wrong, and would still be smoking without any warnings had it not been for the whistleblower, not the industry itself. It shows you a lot about the integrity of the people running and working in the industry, not the government. They knew from holding the patents that it was addictive. And the media was also complicit because they were taking ads. But look how long it took us to stop something once we finally knew it was bad and could be addictive. Now ask the average person to give up meat, chicken, fish, veal. They're not going to. Only a small infinitesimal 1-2% of the population in a given 10-year period will change. Today, only about 4% of Americans are vegetarian, and only about 1.5% of the vegetarians are vegans. So it's not that we lack information. It's that we lack the desire to change. So we keep intentionally. It would be like malice aforethought. I'm going to eat those French fries. I'm going to eat those the carnival food. That's a crazy show. Guy shows you the worst food in the world and yumming it up. So what happens when we're drinking alcohol, we're doing drugs, we're overweight, we're obese, we have all these diseases, and yet the only conversation we're willing to have is, am I covered by insurance? Well, shouldn't you take a look at how you got sick? Your heart disease, your cancer? Shouldn't you look at the environment? Shouldn't you look at diet? Shouldn't you look at your stress? Shouldn't you look at your workplace and toxicants? Shouldn't you look at the quality of your life and see what you could change proactively to prevent these conditions? No, that's not going to be discussed anywhere at any time by anyone. We only want to talk about cover us. Okay, if you're going to be covered, why don't you have universal care? No, can't do that. Why? Because ideologically and politically, we've been told not to do that. Have you used your own common sense and reason, research, to show you would save $2 trillion? You know the things about the liberal community today, which there's a lot that really bothers me, as well as the conservatives, that's why I have nothing to do with either, is one will say Obamacare, and the other will say, private. And it's all, both models are based upon profit. No one's questioning spending $100,000 for chemotherapy in 1 year. No one is challenging the oncologist. No one's challenging the rheumatologist. No one's challenging the statin manufacturers, the people using them. No one's challenging the price of a drug because both sides of the equation believe in the free market. Well, what if you had a different mindset that said, why can't we take profit out of our healthcare system and make it universal so nobody goes broke? But then more importantly, why don't we completely, radically change our entire medical system? Because we're giving people therapies that will kill them or are not effective. We're over-treating, over-drugging, over-medicating our children and on. Do we not care about our children? Evidently not. So think for a moment. Just use common sense. Isn't it better to prevent a condition than to argue, am I going to go broke if I have to copay? Or is it better to have universal care? And then what about the therapy that you're getting? Shouldn't that be proven by outside, independent, non-pharmaceutical people that the therapy actually works? Because if you did that, 80% of all current medical procedures would be disallowed for lack of scientific efficacy and safety. You would then have to have a whole new renaissance in healthcare that would be terrific. It would save lives. But then why don't we have that same renaissance when it comes to prevention? Now, I'm on the air a long time. ABC Network, WABC, WOR, WVD for over 35 years on those stations, and WBI for 41 stations, and yet look at still how few people actually apply the principles of prevention and non-toxic therapies, both of which exist. So in this one chapter, I ask people to challenge, find me the studies that support what you're eating and drinking that's good for you. Because if you can't find them, and I'm showing you hundreds of studies that are bad for you, speed up disease, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, dementia, Alzheimer's, then what does it say about you that you're willing to sacrifice your health and your life for what? Artificial needs? Comfort foods? Unhealthy lifestyle? It's that kind of chapter that we need in our lives just to have a stop for a moment and question why we stay intentionally ignorant versus intentionally, proactively conscious, mindful, and make mindful choices, because health comes from mindful choices. So here is this University of Nevada study. And it talks about, quote, the evolution of the gene responsible for red meat to produce cancer has been revealed, quote, a sugar called NEU5GC present in red meat and some fish and dairy products is related to the appearance of spontaneous tumors in humans. Research at the University of Nevada analyzed the evolutionary history of this particular gene, which allows the synthesis of this sugar, and shown which groups of animals have lost the gene and therefore are more susceptible for human consumption and organ transplants. Now, we don't have the ability to neutralize this gene. Humans have lost that ability. So now we have the actual science showing you the gene that's in the flesh that when you consume can create spontaneous tumors. So we have all the science to show why we should be on a healthy plant-based diet. That doesn't mean that we will give up this, but we should be very honest about it. We should just be honest that we want to have no mindful discipline in our lives. None. But we expect a good outcome. That's cognitive dissonance. Now, this is good because this shows from the University of Cambridge what happens when we're wanting to take an exam of any kind. Mindfulness training reduces stress during exam. And it says, mindfulness training can help support students at risk of mental health problems, concludes a randomized controlled trial carried out by researchers at the University of Cambridge. Now, in lay language, what this is saying is that, yeah, when you're going up for a test, you're going to be stressed. You don't want to fail the test. At the same time, how can you deal with that? Well, a lot of people take medications, and a lot of people wrongly believe that if they're taking methylated drugs, or let's say the kind of drugs that overstimulate the body, its biochemistry, like cocaine or methamphetamine, that you'll do better on tests. That's the current rage in colleges. People think, well, I'm only taking it to take a test. Yeah. Start taking methamphetamine and see how easy it is to get off of it. It's not. I've helped a lot of people, thousands of people, get off drugs. But if you simply took mindful meditation before a test, your whole mind will be relaxed. The stress won't be limiting your capacity to think, make judgments, recall, and your memory will be sharper. So just about an hour of mindful meditation before a test can help you with that task and test. Now, walking an extra 2 minutes each hour can offset the hazards of sitting too long. University of Utah, this is a new study published in Clinical Journal of American Society of Nephrology, and it talks about what's, first of all, when we're sitting. Now, think of all the people right now who are sitting at their desk and will sit there for hours at a time. Bad. There's also this new kind of desk, and good for the guy for inventing it, where you can pick it up. It flips up, so you can stand and work at your computer or desk. But in and of itself, your legs are still not moving. What you need to do is you need to be moving your legs at least every hour and a half. Just getting up and walking for 2 minutes will help offset the damage done by your blood circulation being limited and pulling in the venous part, which is your lower extremities. And that's why a lot of people have varicosities and purpley veins and swelling. But move those legs. Think of the people on airplane flights more than 2 hours, or just being on an airplane for 2 hours. You should get up and walk the aisles for at least 2 minutes every hour. I also suggest every time you take a flight that you take a little group of supplements. And these supplements should include green tea, L-carnitine, 1,000 milligrams, green tea maybe 200 to 1,000 milligrams, vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams per hour, quercetin, 1,000 milligrams per hour in the air, vitamin E, 400 units at the beginning of a flight, and if it's more than 4 hours, another 400 units, and coenzyme Q10, 100 milligrams, each 3 hours you're in the air, plus magnesium. That will continue with cayenne each hour. That will continue to keep your blood thin and good methylation of your blood, helping prevent a stroke or thrombosis or clots or intermittent claudication. So people don't realize how dangerous it is to your body when you're sitting for a long period of time. From the University of Reading, which is in the United Kingdom, drinking orange juice could help improve brain function, and especially those who are older. And they took a group of people and who were average age 67, and they consumed about 1 pint of orange juice and found some remarkable improvements, including, quote, this was for 8 weeks. They had improved memory, reaction time, verbal fluency, and all that was improved. So it improved overall global cognitive function. So we all need to improve our function mentally. So having a glass of orange juice, now my suggestion, organic orange juice, that would be terrific. Just one glass could do that. And it's got a lot of good antioxidants in it as well. And also from the University of Minnesota, antibiotics are the most common prescribed drug given to children, and a third of such prescriptions are not necessary. This would not necessarily be a cause of concern, except that antibiotics disrupt gut microbes, imbalances in which are linked to disease in later life, say researchers after reviewing current knowledge linking antibiotic use in infants, imbalance in gut microbiomes in adults. So here's the deal. We're over-vaccinating our children, and then they end up with all forms of autoimmune conditions, from asthma and coughing, ear infections, and then they're given antibiotics. Yet these are not due to bacteria, and hence more than a third. They're saying a third. I'm saying at least half to 75% of all antibiotics are not needed. Antibiotics don't do diddly squat for a cold or flu, and yet they're the number one prescribed medical prescription for colds or flu. And that's just malpractice. So just make sure that you're taking, as a mother, your own probiotics, and see also that your gut is healthy. The more fermented foods, the more probiotics that's in your gut, the healthier will be your baby. And that gut microbiome, and for children in particular, is very important. Get them off the sugars, get them off the colas, and get them having healthy juices. And finally, from the College of Pharmacy at Kingside University, researchers found tropical tree extract inhibits liver cancer. They found that they determined that the extract from the leaves and branches of the red spruce tree, and that's a small tree that grows in hot and tropical regions from Hawaii to Mexico to the Caribbean and Africa, it inhibits the growth of liver cancer. So that's important. And again, let me give you the name of it. Red spruce tree, the leaves and the extract. That's good. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. In about 5 minutes from now, we'll have our guest on talking about the gut microbiome, what we were just discussing. I'll give you my ideas about the why we should be opposing the tax plan and what we should do to support middle-class Americans, because that tax plan is going to wipe out the remaining middle-class Americans. Just one quick announcement that as of now, today, you can watch the trailer of my newest feature social issue documentary, Deadly Deception. Go to prn.fm. P stands for Progressive, R Radio N Network, prn.fm, and you can watch the trailer. Because this week I'm having a small, limited, private showing of it. And if you want to join me on Thursday evening, 7 o'clock in Manhattan, to watch this documentary, you can call the box office. Here's the number, 212-864-5400. 212-864-5400. But now you can watch it and see how powerful it is. And it's a powerful, powerful film. And aesthetically, probably the most beautiful film I've ever produced, but also the hardest hitting film I've ever produced. Lots of brand new information in there. So that's that. Look forward to seeing those of you who are going to join me on Thursday evening for the premiere of my new film. Worldwide, everyone else, you'll be able to watch the film in mid-January when I have a press conference. We release articles, brand new articles that we're working on. We have a whole webinar with panelists on. It's going to be very, very interesting. And that'll be in mid-January. Now for our, I can't have talk back right now because we're finally getting in this week our brand new state-of-the-art phone system. But I want you to think about what this man's saying. This is a former executive of Facebook talking about social media ripping society apart.
I want to bring us back to the point that you were making about exploiting consumer behavior in a consumer internet business. You said that this is a time for soul searching in social media businesses, and you were part of building the largest one. What soul searching are you doing right now on that?
I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences, I think in the back, deep, deep recesses of our minds, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we are in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years. It's created huge tension with my friends, huge tensions in my social circles. If you look at, like, you know, my Facebook feed, I've posted maybe 2 times in 7 years, 3 times, 5 times. It's less than 10. And it's weird. I guess I kind of just innately didn't want to get programmed, and so I just tuned it out. But I didn't confront it. And now to see what's happening, it really bums me out. Like, think about, like, there were these examples where there was a hoax in WhatsApp where in some like village in India, people were like afraid that their kids were going to get kidnapped, etc. And then there were these lynchings that happened as a result, where people were like vigilante running around. They think they found the person, and they, I mean, seriously? Like, that's what we're dealing with. You know, imagine like when you take that to the extreme, where, you know, bad actors can now manipulate large swaths of people to do anything you want. It's just it's a really, really bad state of affairs. And we compound the problem, right? We curate our lives around this perceived sense of perfection because we get rewarded in these short-term signals, hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth. And instead, what it really is fake, brittle popularity that's short-term and that leaves you even more, and admit it, vacant and empty before you did it. Because then it forces you into this vicious cycle where you're like, what's the next thing I need to do now? Because I need it back. Think about that compounded by 2 billion people. And then think about how people react then to the perceptions of others. It's just it's really, really bad.
It sounds like you're taking deep personal responsibility also in being a part of it.
I did a great job there, and I think that business overwhelmingly does positive good in the world. Where I have decided to spend my time is to take the capital that they rewarded me with and now focus on the structural changes that I can control. I can't control that. I can control my decisions, which is I don't. I can control my kids' decisions, which is they're not allowed to use it. And then I can go focus on diabetes and education and climate change. And that's what I can do. But everybody else has to soul search a little bit more about what you're willing to do, because your behaviors, you don't realize it, but you are being programmed. It was unintentional, but now you got to decide how much you're willing to give up, how much of your intellectual independence. And don't think, oh yeah, not me, I'm a genius, I'm at Stanford. You're probably the most likely to fall for it.
Okay, he was lecturing to a group of graduate students at Stanford University. And I think it's important that we listen to a few of the things he said. We all have benefited to some degree by the internet. And yet the internet today is used to attack people who are progressives, who speak out, whistleblowers. There are trolls everywhere. Major corporations are using the internet, like Wikipedia, to put up postings of people and then attack them, and the people that they're putting up and libeling can't change them. That's what's happening. They're also keeping the flow of people going away from truth dig and countercurrents so that you're not getting the quality, objective, and honest information you need on any issue. So there's a lot of downsides, and yet there's still upsides. I mean, we're the number one progressive radio program and network in the world. Google it. You'll see. There we are, and have been. Just on one server, we have 16. One, we had 10 million listeners a month. That's just one of 16. So we wouldn't have been able to reach those people around the world without that internet. So it definitely, I agree with him, it does serve very positive purposes, but it's a double-edged sword. And then what about being addicted to it? That is a negative. Now, with that, we're going to go to our guests in a moment here, but I want to read this because this is from a Rob Schemetz, and it's called Adapt or Die, Millennials, Technology, and Net Neutrality. I'm only going to read a page because he makes his major point in this first page. And he says, it was 2 days before the FCC repealed net neutrality, and I was at a talk given by a baby boomer about my generation, millennials, and the vastly changing workplace in America. The theme of this talk was the workplace needs to adapt to the millennial generation or die. companies like Sears and JCPenney's are dying because they've not adapted to the millennial generation. But more importantly, in this speaker's eyes, they haven't adapted to technology. Millennials, technology, and the end of net neutrality. These aren't just items of a list. They are interlocked and interconnected. Millennials are now the ethos of the workplace, and technology is the ethos of capitalism. That's really what this speaker was subconsciously telling his audience. In 2015, millennials officially became the largest generation in the workforce. And in the near future, we'll make up 75% of all the workforce. This is where the adapt-or-die capitalist mentality is permeating in the halls of corporate boardrooms. The tech-savvy capitalists see baby boomers in the workplace are becoming a thing of the past. They understand 10,000 baby boomers a day, 10,000 baby boomers a day are retiring. And that this retirement extravaganza will only pave the way for companies to further embrace adapting to the "there's an app for that" or an artificial intelligence for this mantra. Using email will become a thing of the past as soon as 2 years from now. The reason millennials and Generation Z would rather text, instant message, or use social media to communicate. Many people under 20 don't even have a personal email address. To some of us, this is mind-boggling, including this millennial. Emails contain too much information. They take too long to read, and they don't cut to the chase. This is what any generation, my generation, millennials and Z believes. The worship of technology has become a race to get information faster through machines. These machines will be able to throw so much information at us in such a short period of time. Information, data, numbers, applications, and artificial intelligence are the gospels to the holy book of this technological age. It's a race for who can give us the most information the fastest, but not too much text in this information, because we don't have the attention span for that. Communication is becoming shorter and shortest. And this is all being run through the internet. And as the way we use the internet is about to change, as we fight against the repeal of net neutrality, let us also reflect on the internet and what it's doing to us. The internet is changing how we think, concentrate, and process information. Studies are showing the internet is lowering our concentration because the internet offers constant distractions. It's reducing our attention span and ruining our interpersonal communication skills. Basically, this technology is dehumanizing us. And while we choose to stare at a screen instead of stare out a screen, what are we spending our time on with this precious neutral internet for? Emailing, social networking, shopping, and streaming? This is what butters the bread of the internet. And we spend, are you ready? Listen to this. In 2016, humans spent 4.5 billion hours watching pornography just on one website called Pornhub. 4.5 billion hours is twice the amount of hours human beings have existed on planet Earth. 1 year of pornography viewing on one website equals more hours than humans have existed on the planet. Okay, here are my thoughts on this. You are correct, but I believe that you are being extremely conservative. I saw it in a meeting with a publishing company that wanted me to do my newest book at 200 pages. I said, why? Because millennials won't read more than 200, and even 200. We see books going down to under 100 pages. I said, then I won't be writing for that group. But there's still a lot of tens of millions of critical thinkers who don't want to be dumbed down, don't want to get all their information off the internet, who want to have actual conversations, who still are capable of reason. What you're saying, in effect, is that you have acquiesced to the marketplace, to a specific group who are not connected to demonstrating as a group against social injustice or the varying inequalities like student debt. They could end all student debt tomorrow if they went on a general strike. but they're not. They could change anything if they organize, but they're too distracted. So if you're saying that there's only one truth, and that's the truth of the younger people on the internet, you are half right. The other half is, I will continue purposefully to write books over 1,000 pages. I will continue to hold conversations that are deep and commentaries that no young person will likely, not know, but most young people wouldn't begin to comprehend. If it means surrendering the integrity of the mind and the spirit and values that actually have existed for a long time, or adapting to the marketplace, I will stick with that which has worked in the past. But that's just me. Let's go over and say hello to my guest who's standing by, Dr. Raphael Kelman. And nice to have you with us today, Raphael.
Oh, thank you, Gary. It's great to be here with you.
Raphael's on Skype today. Raphael, let's go to the subject at hand, and that is our gut and the bacteria in our gut.
Yes.
And how the quality of that bacteria can impact our moods, our emotions, our health, our longevity, and either promote health or promote disease. And yet, I mentioned earlier in the program that 95% of Americans are eating a diet that only promotes disease. There's nothing healthy about it. And this is what the media and industry and the scientific community and the medical community has adapted to. Even if they mean no better, they're not sacrificing a dollar of revenue or research or medical practice to say, this is wrong. Take us on your journey now of the gut and what we need to know to stay healthier.
Absolutely. You know, it's not, Gary, you know, what, it's not just about the gut. It's about what's in the gut. The unseen hidden world of bacteria. There are trillions of bacteria within us, within the gut, that are not our enemies. They are our greatest ally. One of the greatest misconceptions in the history of science is demeaning bacteria. This delusion that bacteria are the bad guys, when in fact, they're the sine qua non of life. They create the infrastructure for life to exist. And it's only because we don't see it that we don't appreciate it. If we would be able to look into the hidden microscopic world, the world that we see, we'll see it radically different. And that would be the best way for people to wake up and to start changing their diets, to be more sensitive to understanding that this is one whole ecology that's much more awesome and powerful than we've ever imagined. And we are going to become interested out of the sheer sense of wonder and awe to improve our diets so that our bacteria will flourish. And in turn, we will flourish, because it's like looking at the coral reef, what it used to look like and what it looks like now. And we're going to see the same phenomenon occurring within us. This will be the main reason, I think, the impetus that people will begin to wake up. We have to start seeing the unseen world. It will change everything we thought we knew about health. It will get people to finally change their diets. It will change the world.
Okay.
So it's about the microbiome.
Let me share a thought. A couple of years ago, a person came to me who had terminal cancer, stage 4, lung, breast, spine, brain. And the reason that this person came is because they wanted to see if there was anything I could do to get the pain reduced so that they didn't have to take the opiates and hospice care. They had a couple of weeks to live. And so I sat for a whole afternoon and spoke with this person about, not about nutrition, not about the gut biome, but rather the meaning of life and what would be the legacy this person could create if they had another chance at life. And that was a discussion that this person has never had. We just assume our life has some purpose because each day we show up for it. And at the end of that discussion, the person realized that they had wasted an awful lot of time. So then I gave her a protocol, and over the period of the next 2 weeks, there was radical change. When I say radical change, I actually have the audio clip, and I'm not going to play it today, because when I do play it, I'm going to have some physicians, orthodox oncologists on the line to try to have them tell me what happened. I know what happened. I want to see if they could. I'm going to get people from Sloan Kettering. Try to.
Good luck.
And one of the people who came to retreat was one of the staff of Sloan Kettering, a medical doctor, who didn't understand what they experienced and what they saw in other people. But this woman had such improvement that five separate medical doctors, including one of America's leading oncologists who was there as a guest, could not palpate any of the tumors that were obvious and present, the size of oranges on her body by the time she left after 2 weeks. She went home and she got a complete medical examination. They could find no tumors in her body, no cancer. She's cancer-free. And I said, do not rejoice, but simply say, what is the lesson I've learned today? I said, wow. Here's the idea. We give all the credit when we get well. Oh, I'm healthy now. Oh, I've lost 20 pounds. That doesn't make you healthy. It just means today you can honor your life by only making positive choices. Because just as easily, you can eliminate the symptoms, whether it's cancer, diabetes, and then you can recreate the same imbalance, and you're going to get right back to where you were.
And that not reaching. What you did, Gary, is that you reached the deepest inner point of a human being. And in my last book, the latest book, The Whole Brain, The Microbiome Approach to Healing, it says depression and anxiety, but that's what the publishing company wanted. I wanted it to extend much beyond. It's what heals the human being, because one of my chapters in there is about the will to activate the inner point, the deepest point of who we are, is this will to give, the will to look outside of ourselves and to open up space for the other. When you do that, you are healing at the deepest level. And what you did was you activated that inner point of the human being. And when that happens, anything could happen, much beyond the chemotherapy or anything, or even the herbs and the supplements. You hit the inner point of who we are. And that I really recommend that people buy my book, The Whole Brain, The Microbiome Approach, because it's the microbiome teaches us about who we are, because it shows us about that we live in a world of giving and receiving, of this constant exchange of giving and receiving in such a optimistic and in such a compassionate and uplifting way, but it's so invigorating. And it just gives us this incredible will to live. And it activates the deepest point. That's what you did. And the microbiome and the will to give, but also a will that you need to sustain yourself. And then you use that to be a greater giver, is really the foundation of life itself. And bacteria know it.
Here's what I appreciate those thoughts. Thank you. But the microbiome, the very gut bacteria, have a consciousness. And we know this now. That's why the gut is called the second brain. And so good bacteria produces different energy, different thoughts, different impact upon the DNA than when you eat a garbage diet. My comment was simply the fact that we've eliminated some symptoms, whatever they may be, doesn't mean we're healthy, doesn't mean we're cured, doesn't mean we're okay. It means that we have started a journey, but you have to reaffirm that journey every single day. That's by right. Only bringing back into your body the healing energy that nature provides, that humans have in the interrelationship we have with positive people, positive energy, negative people, negative energy, victim people, victim energy. you know, blaming people, blaming energy. Well, you want disease, right. Be around blaming victim people, and you'll have nothing but disease as an energy. And that also impacts the biome because there's a consciousness there. The biome can only act in a way that supports our conscious or unconscious choices.
But Gary, to prove your point, and Gary, I always liked you. Now I like you even more because of what you're saying. So much beyond, you know, vitamin C and B complex. This is really foundational. When children, toddlers, newborns experience adverse experiences, childhood experiences, the lack of love, or I hate to even say it, emotional trauma, it's encoded in their bacteria. The bacteria, like you were saying, have a consciousness, they have a memory, they retain this. The memories are retained within us. There's a consciousness, there's a memory in every cell, but most of our cells are bacterial. And they came around first, they're primordial. And the primordial experiences is what gets encoded within us, not the rational brain, which is the low man on the totem pole, but the primordial stuff. And it gets encoded in the bacteria. But here's what's so phenomenal. I talk about in the whole brain in this book, in my latest book, how to change this. How do you change the trajectory of someone's life? How do you change the health of someone who had adverse childhood experiences, which the research shows it increases their chances of inflammatory diseases, of autoimmune diseases, of cancer, of heart disease, much beyond any risk factor that we know of. I mean, sometimes 600 times greater incidence of autoimmune disease the more adverse childhood experiences you have. It's called ACEs. But what's amazing is we now can heal it by changing the microbiome, by through diet, like you're saying, by eating foods that have different information. You know, we have to look at food as information. If it's coming from garbage, then it's telling us garbage, and it's negative, and it's repressive, and it's harmful, and it's hurtful, and it creates bad energy, and it certainly doesn't heal our past. But good food that's with sensitivity, that you eat it with sensitivity and awareness and appreciation, and you could actually see that the food doesn't come from the supermarket, but it comes from the farm with sun and water and the tenderness of a farmer, then yes, that's going to change your microbiome.
Raphael, we will continue this discussion, but we're out of time right now. This is Dr. Raphael Kelman, K-E-L-L-M-A-N. He's a Manhattan-based board-certified physician in internal medicine, and he is also the author of The Whole Brain. And his website is kelmancenter.com. And by the way, that woman who I helped, there was no vitamins, minerals, or herbs given to her. It was all about love, loving yourself. And that also impacts our biome and DNA.
I have a story like that, too. I'll tell you one day.
All right. We're out of time, but we'll have Dr. Kelman back to continue this discussion. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward tonight, 7 p.m., Progressive Commentary Hour on the environment. Again, lots of good quality information in depth. And if a millennial can listen for the full hour without fainting or head exploding, you're welcome on board. Have a nice day, everyone.